Hey guys, Pastor Justin Dean here with a special announcement. May 10th and 11th, we are hosting a conference here at Sacred City Church with Dr. Glenn Sunshine as our keynote speaker. If you don't know who Dr. Glenn Sunshine is, he is professor of history at Central Connecticut State University, a senior fellow at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. He's an award-winning author. He's published all kinds of different books and articles and even chapters in other books on history, theology, culture, all over the place. He's widely published. One of his books, one of his most recent books that I've read is called Slaying Leviathan. And it's about how limited government and resistance in the Christian tradition. And he's going to be speaking on this topic on Friday night. And then he's going to be moving on into how Christian resistance informed the Declaration of Independence on Saturday. Let me just read a little blurb from his book. It says, Christians first expressed these political truths under Caesars, kings, popes, and emperors. We need them in the age of presidents. Leviathan is rising again, and the first weapon we must recover in the longstanding Christian tradition is resisting governmental overreach. Our bloated bureaucratic state would have been unrecognizable to the founders, and our acquiescence to its encroachments on liberty would have infuriated them. But here's the point. Our Leviathan would not have surprised them. They were well acquainted with the tendency of governments to turn tyrannical. Quote, eternal vigilance is the price we pay for liberty. So he's going to look at the Christian tradition, the Christian Protestant tradition that helped found our country, that sparked, you know, that was created during the Reformation, and it goes all the way into the Declaration of Independence. It's a truth that we need to get a hold of today as our state, our government, our bureaucracy is ever expanding, and we want to educate our people on Christian resistance to tyranny. And so we hope that you can make it out. You can email us at the church. There'll be links going out on Church Center. There'll be links going out on social media. You'll be finding those soon, but please block out your schedule May 10th and 11th. We look forward to joining us here at Sacred City Church. Hello and welcome to the Sacred City Life Podcast. This is your host, Pastor Justin Dean. This is a podcast for you to help you follow Jesus in the everyday normal rhythms of life. And I have four other people on the podcast today, so we've got something special for you. Gentlemen, would you do introduce yourselves? And then the visiting couple, would you introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Kevin Knorr, counseling pastor.
This is Alex Tate, Sacred City Youth Director.
This is Jordan Maurer.
And Anna Kate Maurer.
All right, Jordan and Anna Kate Maurer, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
This is our first time ever doing this. We do have the Maurers. They are on vacation, and so we're kind of Skyping their audio in. So this is an experiment for us a little bit. And we wanted to have them on the podcast today because we want to specifically talk about how a Christian should think about IVF, in vitro fertilization. Another thing you hear a lot about is ART, artificial reproductive technologies, and it's a complicated subject. It's got a lot of emotion tied to it. It's got a lot of ethical questions tied to it, and Jordan and Anna Kate have worked through a lot of these. They're members of our church, and they've worked through a lot of these ethical considerations, and they've thought biblically about it, and they've pursued IVF, and in our marriage conference, there was a question about IVF, and I said, that's too big to answer here. We'll answer that on the podcast later, and so I invited Jordan and Anna Kate on here to answer all of our questions. So that's what they have a simple job description today. Just answer all the questions for us, guys. So, no, we don't expect them to answer all of our questions, but before we jump into all of those ethical questions, I just want to give Jordan and Anna Kate an opportunity to kind of share some of their story, where they're coming, how they came to some of these conclusions, what pressed them to kind of figure this kind of stuff out. And so, Jordan and Anna Kate, I'll kind of give the microphone to you now.
Yeah. Hey, so this is Jordan. So a couple of things that we're hoping we're able to do on this podcast is really just one to inform people on IVF in the process of that. And then really just tell people our journey through IVF, some of the guardrails that we used to be able to do this in a biblical mindset. We were trying to do that to the best of our ability. And then really to talk to some of those folks, some of those Christian folks that may be in a position where they're in a dilemma maybe now, and what they can do and who they can maybe talk to ultimately beyond that. So we started IVF, which is in vitro fertilization, back in, what was that?
2017. After 4 years of infertility.
Okay, so it's 4 years of infertility, and so we kind of said, all right, well, let's think of something else. Like, what else can we do? And there was a lot of prayer about what the next step was, and quite frankly, there's a lot of hesitation, particularly on my part, about doing IVF. So I said, well, let's go learn about it a little bit more, and let's see how God can help us kind of walk through that. So I'm going to kind of let Anna Kate set the rest of the stage up.
Yeah, I'll bring a little bit more of the emotional side to the infertility journey to the podcast today. But after 4 years of infertility, we were also in a church that had an average of 3 to 4 kids per family. So it was a really hard time that we both felt very confused during that time in our life, that why God wasn't answering our prayers. And we both came to the conclusion that God was calling us to be content with himself before we started this IVF journey, that we knew that children were not going to complete our marriage, we're not going to complete our happiness. But we felt a very big call in our life to have children. And so when we came to the IVF doctor, we asked some pretty hard questions about what their belief was on how they handled life at their clinic, as we believed that when sperm meets egg and cells start to divide, that life begins. And we wanted to honor every embryo that would be the outcome of our IVF process. And the clinic, we went to UNC Fertility in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they were able to ensure us that they would honor our wishes and kind of checked all the boxes that we needed to have checked to move forward. And that gave us a lot of peace. And at the time, we just felt a lot that we were trusting God in all of those steps. That we had financially made some decisions. At the time, I was working and we started to save all of my paychecks, so we weren't going to face financial debt for that time and that process. So I don't know if you want to add next.
Yeah, no, just to
Jordan, let me. So this is, first of all, I want to just kind of honor the process that you guys went through there. Because this is a growing problem. Infertility rates in the United States are increasing. It's like something like 12% of women and 10% of men, something around there, are dealing with these infertility issues. And the temptation for Christians, we read the Bible, we know that children are a blessing from the Lord. We want to have children. We want to have big families. And the temptation is just to rush right into something and be kind of an early adopter and just, okay, we want it. God says it's good. Let's just make it happen without counting the cost and being wise and being sober-minded. And like you said, spending a few years just praying and asking God to do it and trying to be content and getting your financial house in order and making sure that everything that if you pursue IVF, that your doctors and everybody's aligned, that we believe that life begins here, and this is a human being, and we want to make sure that they're taken care of. And then as the process goes on, we want to we want to care for every single one of these embryos as if they were, because they are human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was the biggest thing. And that was the first question I had with our doctor was, when do you believe life begins? And to be honest, she didn't agree with me. I said, I believe the embryo was life, and they did not believe that. And I said, well, as long as you can maintain my request that that is when we believe it, and there's no issue with that. But just to make the point that a large part of even the doctors don't necessarily believe that. So that's also, we also need to know that.
Yeah. And I think another thing to really remember is that as Christians, when you go into these clinics, they are going to throw a lot of facts at you to say things like, well, you need to fertilize as many eggs as you can because you're only going to get 50% of what you fertilize. And it's $18,000 to do the first step of IVF. So you don't want to waste your money to have to come back and fertilize eggs. And so as Christians, that can feel really overwhelming because, one, you're thinking $18,000 plus $7,000 to $8,000 per transfer after that. And so you're thinking like, you know, we have to be wise financially. And you're also thinking about the statistics that they're showing at you. But one thing to remember is that these clinics are thriving to have success. So they're not really giving you those examples for your benefit or for your financial situation. They're giving them those information so that their clinic looks successful. And so that's really important to remember as you look at how many embryos you want at the end of the process and things like that. So like for our situation, they told us that they were going to be extracting 30 eggs. We got on our knees. We got on our knees the whole week before surgery and said, you know, God, we cannot have even 15 embryos. And we want to be wise with this. Like, what is the number? What do we fertilize? How do we handle this? And so we really, really prayed about it. We were on our knees daily. And Jordan really felt like the Lord was saying 10. And so
to fertilize 10.
You have to decide how many eggs you're fertilizing before surgery because of the process. Because they fertilize those eggs immediately after they exit the body. So you have to have a plan in place. And so we told them 10, and I woke up from surgery and the doctor came in and said, Anna Kate, unfortunately we only extracted 9 eggs, and I don't really know why. I don't know. I was really expecting 20 to 30 today. And Jordan and I looked at each other and said, we know why. That you only got 9. So out of those 9, we were able to have 5 embryos created. And then the 5th embryo did not make it to day 5. The first embryo was a fresh transfer that was unsuccessful. And then we had our 2nd and 3rd transfers gave us Henry and Hayes. And then our 3rd transfer was most recent, our 4th transfer, I'm sorry, was our most recent transfer. And that was unsuccessful, unfortunately, but we do have 2 healthy, healthy boys.
Yeah, and just for the listeners out there, so kind of the process, and Anna Kate can help me out on this, but she kind of talked through it. But the process is eggs are extracted from the mother, and then the sperm is obviously taken from the father, and they fertilize them outside of the womb and into basically a petri dish. And then cells start dividing if they do. And then at day 5, they look at whether or not that embryo has even made it to the 5th day. Some of those embryos, and a vast majority of them, don't even make it. So then everything that's made it to the 5th day, they'll maintain, and then they kind of grade them from there.
Yeah, so they one thing that's really amazing, and I think that we really saw God's hand in, is they show you a picture of your embryo, and they will point. They'll say, these are the cells that make up the baby, and these are the cells that make up the placenta. And so for us, again, that was just a beautiful picture of God's design, confirmation of these embryos being life. And in that grading system, they grade them based on the way that the cells look and the way that they're dividing, the size of the embryo. And so we had, and it's a scale from 1 to 5, 5 being the best, and then A to D. And then the letter system gets a little crazy, but we had mostly 4 to 5 AB, 5AB, 5BB mm-hmm. embryos. So
yeah, and I would say to the Christian out there that is thinking about, okay, if they have X amount of embryos, to not get hung up on the grading system either. We also know people, one, that have gotten pregnant with embryos on the lower end of the scale. So not being tempted with, well, we don't have the, you know, the embryo's not in that quote unquote what the doctors would say the best embryo that we could have. But I think God can do amazing things, and He does do amazing things despite what we think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would the doctor say, you know, if it's not a Christian doctor and you've got, you know, embryos on the lower scale, what would the doctor say to a normal person that they should do with those embryos?
They would probably say that they are not viable embryos, or that they would bring about miscarriage or a child with a disability, or, you know, something along those lines. They would probably advise against. Sometimes I've heard that they will combine like a weaker embryo with a stronger embryo and transfer. That doesn't happen as much anymore. I know there is a lot of information out there saying that IVF clinics still encourage transfer of two embryos at once. But from our knowledge, our clinic really discouraged that. They encouraged one embryo at a time. So I think it's important to also find a clinic that does that. But I would say that they would probably discourage transfer of a low-grade embryo.
Yeah.
And then what would happen to that embryo?
I would say they discard it in some way. I don't know the specifics of how they would do that. But
that's why we want to make everyone aware of that, because you might be in there and a doctor saying, oh, yeah, you know, this might have a abnormality, might not come to full term, and so you should just get rid of it. And Christians have to remember that that's a human being, that's a human person, right? And so we are pro-life all the way down. We believe that, even though this is where it gets complicated, human beings are involved, and God told us to take dominion of the earth, and he told us to, you know, take the raw goods of his creation and create technology and that would enable us to flourish. And IVF, you know, is a piece of that. Mm-hmm. But with every advance of technology, there's always a balance, a tension that you have to walk with it destroying life or you know, just like, I mean, simple things as, you know, well, the first, you know, the first walking stick can help a person walk down the road, or it can also kill a guy with, right? And so that's all technology has that type of potential in it, and we need to be aware that when a doctor who doesn't share our biblical worldview says, oh yeah, you know, it's not viable, this, that, and the other, that's a human being there, and we want to protect life. And yeah. And so this is what's going on inside of these clinics a lot of times. It becomes, you know, kind of a mixture. We've all heard of, like, you know, big business and big pharma and big everything. Well, it can become, you know, big ART or something like that. That their goals are to be successful in their mind, their goals are to make money. I mean, they're not doing it just out of the goodness of their heart. They're wanting to make money. And and so Christians have to be informed when they're walking. And that's really hard to do. I mean, it's really hard to do when you're sitting across the table for some medical professionals that can be basically, don't you want a baby or not? You know, like, so that's.
Yeah, I think we go all the way back to what you kind of started everything is, I think the Christian has to first establish that life begins at conception. And that really drives the rest of the decisions. So if you have that in your mind and that's driving the rest of the decisions, for example, when they do the egg retrieval and you're trying to figure out, okay, how many should we fertilize? Well, I think the numbers are somewhere into the 30 to 50% that are fertilized will actually make it to day five. So let's say you're trying to be wise with that and you say, maybe we only fertilize six because 30 to 50% are going to make it. And we only think we can afford three kids. Like instead of saying, well, the doctors told us to fertilize 20. Well, what if you get 10? Can you afford 10? Probably yeah. not. I mean, I would beg to say that most people can't afford that many kids, not to mention they probably can't afford to physically have them in IVF. They probably physically can't have, you know, afford 10 kids just to have. And so thinking through that, that process of like one, financially, two, how many are we going to do? And then, you know, is it the doctor's order or is it just, hey, we're going to follow Christ and what we feel like he's leading us to, that we should take on versus what the world is telling us to do. And they may say, well, that's not very economical on how you're doing that. And saying, you know what, I understand what you're saying, but we're trusting God that he's going to take care of us based on us being faithful.
Yeah, that's great. And again, you just mentioned it, but just the doctors here, they're working with the grain of the universe that God created. They're not, so the doctors aren't creating life, right? Only God gives life. We're told over and over in scripture that, you know, God formed us, God formed our inward parts. He knitted us together in our mother's womb, that we're fearfully and wonderfully made. And so you were mentioning to me before we started recording how, you know, fascinating it was that the doctors could not work outside of God's design when it comes to, you know, fertilizing the egg and you know, even the timeline of things. Could you expand on that a little bit, Jordan?
Yeah.
Or Anna Kate, either one.
Anna Kate may be better.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so a normal couple, you know, on their own has a 20% chance of getting pregnant every month. With an IVF, being an IVF patient, you have a 50% chance. And so in a normal couple trying to get pregnant, egg and sperm meet at like the top of the fallopian tube. And then it takes 5 days for that embryo to come down the fallopian tube and enter the uterus. So the reason why they grow those embryos to day five or six is because the body will receive that 5 to 6 day embryo in the same way that it would receive it if it was conceived naturally. And so that answers your question as far as like them using the design that God has already created for that process. You know, they're not entering a day 14 embryo with, you know, a leg poking out or something into your uterus. It's got to be on exactly the time that God has created the body to work. And so it's just pretty amazing how that works.
Mm-hmm. That is, yeah. That's so fascinating. And again, so even though, so human beings have to work within the parameters that God has set up to create life, right? And so have to take, you know, the sperm and the egg and allow fertilization. And then in 5 days, they know, and then they can insert that embryo. And like Ecclesiastes says that, you know, you don't know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child. So you don't know the work of God who makes everything. So human beings can't invent life. They can't create life. They can only work in the parameters that God has set up for life to be given. And even though human beings are involved in, right, the natural way of producing children, human beings also have to be involved in this, what they call artificial or whatever. They have to be involved in this. And so it's not human beings creating life. Only God puts the spirit in the body, right? Only God creates life. So I just think that's a fascinating point that you brought up. and encouraging, because we know when we know when life begins, we know where life comes from. It doesn't come from human beings, it comes from God himself.
You think, Justin, you could break down like the conception piece of, you talked about when life happens. You think you could talk to that a little bit?
What do you mean specific? Can you get more specific?
Yeah, I mean, really, can you just break down what conception is for the people that are on the podcast that are listening? Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. I'll speak to it. I'll let Anna, Kate, and Jordan, if you're going to speak to this, but because I'm obviously no doctor, but I can add to it if you want. Jordan, do you guys feel comfortable answering?
Yeah, I think if we're no doctor either, but I think we can tackle it as best we can. We'll let you come over top.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to obviously sperm and egg meet, it's not just they meet. The egg actually has to penetrate the egg. That's what I meant to say. Everybody's going to be like, what in the world? Sperm has to penetrate the egg. And then at that point, cells start dividing pretty soon after that. So in some people will make the argument with conception that, you know, you can't, it's not a life until it's in the mother's womb, because it can't actually embed into the mother's womb, it can't be embedded into the mother's womb, and so it can't live outside of her. Well, that's kind of the argument that we hear throughout culture, right, about a lot of things. Well, you can't just say, since my one-year-old, you know, can't live without me for a day either. So, right.
And I've heard that argument. I heard a comedian once say, listen, if you make a cake and it's on its way to the oven, it's still a cake. Nobody says, hey, I've got a bunch of ingredients here, and then it'll become a cake when it finishes baking, right? Like, the thing's it's a cake. And same, we have that same logic. Once the egg is fertilized by the sperm and cells are reproducing, that is new human life. Mm-hmm. That is a human person right there. That's what we call conception. Mm.
That's good.
Yeah, so there will be that argument about placement, I guess you would call it the placement theory or concept of where a life is. And that's kind of pervasive through culture right now. I was also going to kind of hit on some of those things that, let's just say you're a Christian listening to this podcast, you're like, okay, well, we're in a place where we haven't made all those decisions. We didn't think through all those things, or any one of those things. I would say to that person, you have embryos left and you're not sure what you're doing with them. So you're trying to make decisions. I would first say to you that you need to pray. That you need to pray that God would ultimately be the source of light for you, that he would help walk you through the next step, the next decision. I think there's obviously grace that God has bestowed upon us, but I do think there are best ways that we can do this to honor and glorify him. So I think there's a lot of unique cases, so I don't want to necessarily hit on everything, but I think in general that the first thing I would do is to seek the Lord if you're caught in a place where you're like, I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I would add to it, one of the dangers of IVF and this process is it has the potential to turn human beings into products. And markets build up around it, and financial incentives. And many, many a couple have gotten pregnant by accident and they couldn't afford it and they had the baby, right? And maybe they had to go down to one car. Maybe they had to have kids share a room. Maybe they had to have, you know, on and on and on we go. And the danger with IVF is, or one of the dangers, not, but one of the dangers is that you think of the child as a commodity, something that you can purchase, and you can say, oh, well, we just can't afford it. And so you don't do what Jordan's saying, and you don't actually pray about it.
Yeah.
Because so if you have these embryos and, you know, the typical process, right, is what if they implant one and you've got five more, you would have typically you would have those embryos frozen. Is that correct, Jordan?
Correct. Yep.
And then a couple years down the road, you're ready for another one, and then they can implant that one. And but the idea, and then, you know, hopefully it's viable, but if not, you've got a few more. But what the situation that Jordan's bringing up is if they tell you to create 30 or something, or 10 or 15 or however many, and let's just say hypothetically you get, you know, you the odds are with you here, and you have three kids, you know, the first three embryos, they all are viable, everything works out great, and you still got seven embryos frozen, what are you going to do there?
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean, and we don't think like this because it's, like he said, it's in a petri dish or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we're like, but there right now, there are literally, thousands of embryos frozen in clinics across the United States. And the negative side of it is there's a growing industry that's building up around this where, in our show notes, I'll link to a video that I watched. And it's from the Center for Bioethics and Cultural Network, Center for Bioethics and Culture Network, Christian organization doing good work here. But it's about, you know, two gay men from France. This process is illegal in France. Surrogacy is illegal in France. And so they literally, the way that we say it, they rented a womb of a woman in Iowa and paid $200,000 to have embryos, you know, implanted in her womb. And they wanted twins, so they put twins there. And so there's this, and then it went really ugly and really bad for them. There's lots of shady stuff that's going on behind the scenes with that, with contracts you have to sign and them controlling your life. And I mean, they were forced to do, because it's illegal in France, so they had to forge birth certificates. The mother had to say that she met this guy in a bar and had an affair with him in order for them to take the babies out of the country. There's a lot of ethical situations that are growing up that are boiling up around this. And so Christians are right to see some benefits and blessings and good, but, you know, in the industry as a whole, we should be very concerned about some of the, so, and then, you know, the other side of it is creating designer babies. It's basically eugenics, where you can choose, I mean, you can choose male, you can choose female, you could choose, you know, whose sperm, whose egg. You could, you know, if it's got chromosomal abnormalities, you can discard it. And that's where this thing could go. You know, I want a really intelligent, I want a really athletic, I want an African American, I want the, where we become, where human beings become commodified. Right? Which is some scary stuff.
Yeah,
no, that's true. I mean, I have seen it where you can literally find the eye color down to, you know, their lineage and DNA of their parents. It's absolutely crazy.
And for us, you know, they offer genetic testing, and we, you know, you can pay more money to have each embryo tested. We decided not to do that. For us, we felt like it didn't matter. We were going to transfer each embryo. I have many Christian friends that have done genetic testing, and for them, it was just a way to have more information, but they remained that they were going to transfer all those embryos. But for us, it just causes more angst, more anxiety, because God can overcome those tests that come back scary. So,
and to add to that is, like, I think the genetic testing often can just lead to more anxiety. And it's just another way to try and kind of control, I think sometimes control that the outcome, or possibly like even change your mind, right? So if you genetic test and for whatever reason that child comes back with Down syndrome, like, I think it's just the devil. It's just opening the door to the devil.
Yeah. Hey, would you go back just a little bit? You said you kind of cut out, your connection cut out there.
Oh, I was saying with genetic testing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just saying that I think it opens up the door a little bit to kind of the devil in your mind of like, well, what will I do if this drum or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. I think you're cutting in and out just a little bit, but you said it opens the door to the devil in your mind, and that's where we, as human beings, it's a real danger and a real threat that we want to control things. Like we would want to, you know, there's a something in us that if we could perfectly design our baby, we probably would, and that wouldn't go well for us, right? It just wouldn't go well for us. And God knows what we need, and God is sovereign. And so sometimes God gives us children. He always gives us children with sinful tendencies that we would not have chosen. All right. And he uses our children with whatever issues they've got to sanctify us and to glorify him, no matter where they're at. Yeah. Can you still hear us, Jordan?
Yep. I got you.
Okay. Good deal.
Go ahead, Jordan.
No, I was just go ahead and ask your question.
I was just going to ask, I knew there were a few things that you wanted to hit on, and what was another one that you wanted to talk about?
So I think we hit on a lot of the things just through talking. You're kind of part of our journey. What is IVF, our journey, and some of the guardrails. I would also say, you know, as Christians, just generally, not even necessarily somebody that is going through IVF, we've talked about a few of the things like build a baby and surrogacy in the sense of using it for homosexual couples. I think there are a few things that as Christians we need to know and we need to have a stance on in general. And I think those are a couple of them. I think discarding embryos is another topic we should have a stance on. Embryos for stem cell research. Transferring more than one embryo at a time. So Anna Kate already had mentioned it, but our facility didn't encourage us to transfer more than one embryo at a time, but it was always my conviction and strong belief that is, you're basically saying we hope one sticks and the other one, sorry. And so I think those are some other things that we need to consider as Christians. Where do we stand in the culture, even if you're outside of the IVF, as being an option for you?
Yeah. And one other option that you had mentioned, if you've got extra embryos, let's say, was they offer like embryo adoption. What does that look like?
Yeah. So I think that's kind of along the lines of build a baby in the sense that, like, let's say, you know, you've had three kids and you have two embryos left. You say, well, we're going to send them up for adoption. I don't know the exact process, but I would assume it's pretty similar to that's how, you know, homosexual families or any other families too can attain pregnancy. So let's just say there was issues on the male end, and so they couldn't get pregnant because of that. And like, so maybe the female then still can get pregnant, just not by her husband. So that, again, this is where we have to parse out and know as Christians, like, who is using this and for what mode they're using it for.
Yeah.
Because I think adoption could be good for a family that, you know, let's just say a male, the male side is the one that's infertile and the female is not. But they just want to adopt, as in you would just adopt a born child.
Right.
But you have to have that thought process already kind of thought out.
Yeah, man. So this process, and this is what we just don't do this anymore. We don't have good, you know, moral reasoning and ethics. We don't think through this stuff, and we just kind of naturally, just like we get the newest iPhone when we can get it and we get the latest technology, that we don't think through these ethically very well anymore. And so this industry, I mean, you guys are a great example of how you can do it ethically and thoughtfully and, you know, thankful to God for this technology. And you did it, you know, very wise. But on the other side, I mean, it's being used in a very unethical, anti-human way. You know, I just saw a news article last week of two gay men, and one of the gay men. So, okay, there's two gay men, and one of the gay guys' sister, and the one who's not the brother, the other one donated his sperm, and sister donated her egg, and then, you know, implanted the embryo in the sister, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of stuff is just ungodly and sinful, you know?
Yeah, and unfortunately, like you've mentioned before, there's an underbelly to it as a business, right? There's even people from the donor aspect, as you mentioned, that was another thing on my list, but you know, people are getting paid really good money to donate either sperm or egg. And so that's an incentive for people there's an incentive for some people, maybe even single people or whatnot, to donate their fertile eggs or sperm, which is another thing that we as Christians really have to have a position on.
Yeah. And their womb as well. The video that I'll post to the link in the podcast today, this woman is basically, she's young, she's married, she's had two kids, they were really easy, and her husband lost her job, she got in a financial bind, and these companies are literally advertising, we'll pay you $15, $25, up to like $40,000, all you have to do is carry the baby, and we'll take care of everything else. And so anytime something becomes commodified and big business gets involved, they're going to try to make money on this, right? And what typically happens is you start getting the vulnerable involved, right? People that can't pay their bills, people that, you know, because obviously, you know, a woman, a normal woman has only got 10, 15, you know, maybe 20 years that she's able to carry a child to term. And so you can get young, inexperienced people that are in a very difficult situation to rent out their womb for 9 months for, you know, 20 grand. And not thinking about the consequences that come with that, the connection between her and the baby that's going to come, that's emotional and anxiety, the physical stuff. If you're receiving an embryo that's not, that your body didn't, so it's not, it wasn't your egg, your body, the woman's body will feel like a foreign invader there and can fight against it. There's a greater chance of hyperclampsia and all kind of postpartum issues that can cause, you know, greater difficulties. And one of the women that did this, they didn't even tell her. So after they implanted the embryos, they told her she was pregnant with twins. And they had supposedly want the couple from Italy and this woman is in Iowa. They implanted a female embryo and a male embryo and didn't tell her. And then the female embryo, I don't know the science behind all this, but something happens with the female embryo did not take, but then the male embryo split. And so it became male twins. And the people in Italy were irate and not wanting to pay the bills, because they had spent $200,000 for a boy and a girl, and they were going to get two boys. And it became a huge, complicated issue that they're still dealing with today. So all kinds of, this is fraught with difficulties, right? Fraught with ethical quandaries and dilemmas. And we want our people to be thinking about this and to be prepared if this is an avenue that they're going to walk, to think through it all the way from beginning to end, Lord willing, in a biblical way, in a Christian way. And I would also say, because Jordan mentioned, pray about it, talk to your pastors about it. And I think, you know, Jordan and Anna Kate would be a great resource as well. And I know you guys have already mentioned to me that you guys would be willing to meet with anybody that wanted to walk through this and talk through this and find out more we're not going to share today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a part of our journey, and one of the things Anna Kate and I really established after going through IVF is we know that this is a part of our story, and it's opened some doors for us to have conversations with people that are either considering IVF or going through IVF. So yeah, we're definitely open to anybody that's thinking in the church or listening to the podcast about doing IVF, kind of how to walk through that.
Awesome. Well, Anna Kate, do you have anything you want to share before we close it down here?
I would just encourage those walking through this infertility journey that God gives us a spirit of peace when we walk these days. And when you're making decisions like this, if your decisions are filled with anxiety and thoughts of control and worry, those just are not from the Lord. And just spending more time with him so that process can be peaceful, and he knows the deepest desires of our hearts. So I think we really learned that and are thankful for that. And so that's one thing we definitely encourage couples to spend time with the Lord in that way. So, yeah.
Well, I just want to thank you guys for sharing your story and sharing a little bit of your journey with us and educating us on this podcast. I really appreciate you guys coming on here. In the middle of your vacation, by the way, you guys are awesome. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, guys. Well, hopefully this podcast was educational for you. Hopefully you learned a thing or two. And if you do have any issues, you could, you know, email me at justindean@sacredcitychurch.com. Any questions, I would love to answer them for you or point you in the right direction. So we just know that we love you. We're praying for you, and God bless.